No, he won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No,
welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. Well, I'm proud to say this is my one-year anniversary. Last April, I started this show. It was a 30-minute show, and the show was about the open meetings lawsuit. And away it went. So thank you so much for being with me for 1 year, and I hope we have another year together. And I really hope that that year is better than the year that we just had. I really hope we're looking at something better coming up here. With that, I have a great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, I will start the show off with Rebecca Kemble from the Progressive Magazine and Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op. And I will finish the hour with Mike McCabe with Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. We will talk about the money raised in the recalls. For the second hour, I'll start off the second hour with Yuri Raskin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Then I'll be talking with Scott Ross, who will give an update from the Kathleen Falk campaign. And I'll finish out my show with Melissa Balda from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. The phone numbers to call in are 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. I also have a live discussion online at blogtalkradio.com, and you can post your comments or questions there. Now, before I get to Rebecca, I have a quick announcement. I want you guys all to put this on your schedules. On April 28th, Wisconsin's Unite Against the War on Women protest. It's a rally scheduled. It's going to start between 1 and 3 p.m. in Madison, Wisconsin. And the rally is part of a coordinated nationwide series of events to march and rally for women's rights. The following confirmed speakers are Chris Taylor. She's the MC. She's from Wisconsin Assembly. Mark Pocan, the Wisconsin Assembly and candidate for Congress. Kelda Helen Royce, Wisconsin Assembly and a candidate for Congress. Yuri Raskin, Janesville City Council and candidate for Assembly, and of course the Raging Grannies and much more. So if you want to learn more about Wisconsin Unite Women, go to www.unitewomenwi.org. Again, that's unitewomenwi.org. With that, I'd like to bring on Rebecca Kemble. Hi, Rebecca. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, Sarah. I'm doing great. Congratulations and happy birthday anniversary.
Oh, well, thank you. I am very excited. I loved it from the very beginning, and I'm excited to see what this new year brings.
Well, it's just amazing this past year and the explosion of citizen journalists out there who have been covering the stories that the corporate media refuses to or doesn't even see anymore. So thanks for being there for us.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you. You've done a lot as well with what you're doing with the Progressive Magazine and with the Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op. I got to make sure I get that right. I got yelled at for not having it right earlier, so on Facebook. So I want to make sure I get that correct, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But how about we start with some information on what's going on with Senator Jouk's recall?
Well, what's going on with Senator Jouk's recall? Just like the Republican Party are running fake Democrats in the primaries against the Democrats in the Republican senator's recall, this is kind of a fake recall attempt by people who are promoting the interests of the mining company that proposed a 21-mile-long open mountaintop removal iron mine up north in the Pinoki Hills. So what's happening is there's a woman named Cheryl Labar who has run for assembly three times and failed to win. She's from Hayward, and she's received campaign contributions from Chris Klein, who's the head of an enormous coal mining outfit. And Senator Jouk was really responsible for organizing for the defeat of a really bad mining bill that this Chris Klein and his company, Gojibic Taconite, were trying to put forward through our legislature. And because Bob Jouk actually worked with other legislators in the Senate, including Republican Dale Schultz, to come up with a compromise mining bill, that actually caused, you know, the original mining bill to fail. And so the mining company obviously was not pleased with that. And so there are these people up north who are launching a recall campaign against Bob Joke. That's nothing more than just harassment. There's not a whole lot of grassroots efforts behind it. They're not going to get the signatures they need. It's just a platform for them to really to abuse Bob Joke for winning, I guess.
So the compromise that Senator Joke did just wasn't good enough for the mining company, apparently, is what I'm hearing?
No, it wasn't. And the Scott Fitzgerald in the Senate never even allowed it to come to the floor. So, and there were some procedural moves they did in the last week of session to put it back into another committee so that they couldn't, the Democrats couldn't pull it and vote on it in the Senate at the last minute. So, yes, that failed. And Senator Joke says he's still willing to work on putting forward this different mining bill. He met with Governor Walker last week to talk about it, and Walker said, well, no, I'm not going to call a special session unless you have the agreement of the Republicans in the Senate to actually bring it forward on the floor, which they don't have. So it's effectively dead.
Well, why didn't Scott Fitzgerald want to bring it to the floor?
Well, he didn't. Okay, so it's a complicated situation. So why didn't he want to bring it to the floor?
Yeah,
or why
Why didn't he? He said he wasn't going to bring it to the floor. And it was a compromise that Senator Joke did with Senator Schultz, who is a Republican. So they worked together to get this compromise bill through and ready to go. And it sounds like Scott Fitzgerald decided that it wasn't good enough for the mining company, and he just didn't bring it up. Is that it as well?
Exactly. And the main reason why it wasn't good for the mining company is because it reinserted a critical element that was taken out in the mining company's version of the bill. And this, and by the way, it literally was the AB 426/SB 488 was its first iteration was written by the lawyers from the mining company, and that's been determined and admitted to. So that literally was the mining company's bill. And what one of the aspects of that bill was they removed this provision of contested case hearings, which is something that is available through the DNR processes for citizens to have, if they have problems with a proposal, they can have an administrative law judge oversee proceedings where citizens or concerned parties can ask the person applying for a permit, whatever kind of permit it is, in this case a mining permit, to produce evidence of whatever nature to back up their claims of whatever. I'm sorry, I'm not being very articulate about it. But basically, it's a legal proceeding where, in this case, the mining company would have to produce scientific data on their, for example, their core boring samples, or they would have to answer questions under oath about scientific issues, environmental issues that could then later be used in court cases. So all of that process was taken out, and the citizens of Wisconsin's right to engage in the process of overseeing, you know, a permit, and especially for a mine of this huge proportion, I mean, that's really critical. So that was taken out of the first bill. The compromise bill reinserted that. And it reinserted it. It didn't even reinsert it in a place before the permit was issued, which is where it is now. It reinserted it afterwards. So even that was a compromise. But evidently the mining company and their Republican backers didn't like that. So it was dead.
Can you repeat the number of that bill?
AB 426. So which one are you asking about? The original, the mining company bill?
And that's AB 426, the original.
Right, and the Senate version that was put forward by Senator Pam Galloway, now former Senator Pam Galloway, was SB 488.
Okay. And what's the one with Jauch and Schultz? That's SB 5 something, I thought.
Yes, I'll look it up and get back to you. It's not on the tip of my tongue right now.
SB 5 something. So, and the contested hearing then basically gives a voice to the people. It basically allows the people to go into an open session to look at and actually question in detail questions to the mining company, which then whatever the mining company says can be used later in court in a court case if found that the mining company had lied or misrepresented or had done something of that nature. Is that correct then?
Correct. Okay. Correct. And it holds them accountable for, you know, for all of the standards, like federal and state pollution standards and clean air, clean water, all of that. Yep. So now underlying all of this is the fact, the actual fact that had any one of these bills passed, they probably would have been passed illegally because the tribes in the area were not consulted directly at all in these bills. And they have federal treaty rights that say that they must be consulted on anything having to do with that's going to affect their water quality, air quality on their reservation. And they also have co-management rights to basically the entire northern one-third of natural resources of Wisconsin. And they were systematically really shut out of the process of writing these bills, despite the fact that they met with the governor. They tried to meet with senators and assembly representatives, but they were given really no seat at the table. They were given disrespect at public hearings. They were given lip service, basically, but they were not given the seat at the table that as a sovereign nation who has co-management rights to those resources up there, they are legally entitled to. So it was a disaster from the beginning. It was destined to be just tied up in court for years. And, you know, they hope it goes away forever.
Well, it was the Native community up there that was actually going to be hit the hardest with this. As I kept telling people over and over again, if the Pinoki Hills were right, or I should actually phrase it this way, if $300,000 homes owned by white people were right at the base of the Pinoki Hills, we wouldn't have even been talking about the mine.
Right. And, well, you know, can I tell you something that's very, very interesting in this whole thing? And is that there are a few white people who live in southeastern Wisconsin who have those kind of homes at the base of the Pinoki Hills. And their voice and their opposition was heard by Bob Jauch. And I'm working on writing about this. It's a very complicated issue. And Bob Jauch in his arguments against this bill, he really uplifted the voice of this one family who were white professional people who had property at the base of this, and said he kind of used their testimony as a way of saying, well, this shouldn't happen because basically white male property rights are in jeopardy. and these people have put their whole retirement into this home, and now they're going to be right next to a mine. And it was very interesting how he had to use that argument over the argument of a whole sovereign nation of people whose water and air and wild rice and way of living was going to be completely destroyed. But using that as an argument was not going to fly in the state legislature. And those, the Bad River Band of of Lake Superior Ojibwe, and their concerns were characterized as environmentally extreme. So the whole debate on this was really had undertones of racism and classism, and you know, it's so interesting that you raise that point, because that was the very point that ultimately I think won the day with some of the with for example Republican Dale Schultz. You know, he could hear that about the white male property rights being affected.
We're going to go to a break in a minute, but this really speaks to the larger issue of state Republicans that just aren't listening or just don't care about what their constituents, and they're listening more to their corporate interests and the people who bankroll their campaigns.
Yep, so, quite literally, yep.
All right, hold on here for a minute, Rebecca. We will be right back with Rebecca Kemble from Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op and the Progressive Magazine, and you're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. As organized labor, MoveOn.org and dozens of other organizations train 100,000 activists for a 99% spring, Occupy Wall Street activist Dana Balicki says it could be a beautiful symbiotic spring of direct action.
There is actually some partnerships and some alliances being built between Occupy and labor. Some folks are really kind of touting as like this historic alliance. You know, we'll see how that plays out. We definitely know that we can't do this alone. It's symbiotic, and we'll see how it plays out. I think that it could be a beautiful symbiotic relationship for spring.
Balicki says labor groups, Move On, and others share the same desire for economic and social justice for the 99%. But Occupy has pushed the envelope on direct action tactics and will continue to do so.
How we really see our relationship shaping up there is, you know, that Occupy's role is to push these organizations to be better than they are.
The Teamsters Union is expressing outrage over news that executives at Hostess Brands may have manipulated their pay, lining their pockets ahead of a bankruptcy filing, while demanding workers' pay be slashed. The Wall Street Journal reported that unsecured creditors want an investigation into Hostess executive pay that skyrocketed in an apparent effort to dodge the bankruptcy code's compensation requirements. Ken Hall, General Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters, says that story suggests that management broke the law, looted the company, and then told workers to suck it up and sacrifice. In Maine, an anti-union bill seems stuck in a legislative committee after that committee took no action on the bill this week. More than 100 union workers came to Maine's State House to protest the bill Wednesday. The bill is a version of the so-called right-to-work anti-union laws that exist in many states. If Republicans can find the votes to pass it, they could still bring it to a vote in the Maine House. Union workers vowed to be at the State House every day until the bill is killed for good. Maine Governor Paul LePage supports the anti-union bill. The bill would allow workers covered by public union contracts and benefiting from them to not have dues deducted from their paychecks. In Detroit, a coalition of 30 unions says state efforts to impose economic controls on the city of Detroit and control union contracts is unconstitutional and an illegal interference with contract rights. Detroit's city council signed an agreement under pressure from the state agreeing to those state-imposed measures. The unions already had agreed to $80 million in concessions, but a U.S. District Court judge refused a challenge by the unions to that consent agreement that the city signed with the state. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're back listening to The Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and I have Rebecca Kemble with me. She is an amazing journalist out of Madison, Wisconsin, and she writes for the Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op and the Progressive Magazine. Now, Rebecca, I want to switch gears a little bit and start talking about this great media co-op that you're in. Can you start off by talking about how the Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op got started?
Sure. Well, what happened was that, you know, just like you did last spring, there were a lot of just regular citizens who were at the Capitol and who were awakened to the extreme attack on our democratic institutions by Scott Walker and his Republican colleagues in the legislature. And we were at the Capitol all the time, going to public hearings, going to Assembly and Senate floor sessions, and we realized that the corporate media was not reporting on some of the most critical stories that were actually taking place. And even if they were, they were reporting on it on a very in a way that wasn't really very informative. So last fall, we realized there was a group of about a dozen of us who were just there all the time and blogging. And by then, I had been writing for The Progressive. But other people had been taking videos, and they had YouTube channels or had their own private blogs. And it was in December when the Department of Administration came out with these new rules on protesting and new rules on having to get permits for free speech activities within the Capitol. So we were in the basement during these what we like to call re-education camps, where the DOA and Capitol Chief Police Tubbs were trying to explain why these rules had to be there. And there was this amazing group of citizens down there asking the tough questions and pointing out really the unconstitutionality of some of these rules. And we thought, oh, we really need to inform the public in a more concerted way. And we decided, all right, let's just start with all of our different skills and facility and different kinds of media. Let's start a website and a news gathering organization that is really grassroots and on the ground all the time at the state capitol. So that's how it started. And we formally organized in January and got a website up, I think halfway through January. And let me just say the name of that website. It's WCMCOOP.com, so WCMCoop.com. And we've got about 200 stories already up on our website in just a couple of months, and some amazing stories that aren't being covered elsewhere, or if they're being covered, you know, we're covering sort of the story behind the story is what we like to say.
You've
so
got
that's how
some,
we got started.
Well, you've got some amazing video journalists and video bloggers and writers and bloggers there. It's an amazing group of people you've just brought together or have been brought together by what's going on in the Capitol. And it's really great to see you guys do that. Now, what kind of mediums are associated with this? I know you've got writers, you've got the videographers. Who else do you have in there?
And photographers. So photographers, we've got Leslie Amsterdam, who's a photographer, Nicole Schulte, who's a photographer and videographer. Whitney Steffen takes pictures. For videographers, we have Nicole Schulte, who has a YouTube channel, Lady Forward One. She did that amazing spoof video, I don't know if you'll recall, last December, of do you remember those enormous Recall Walker banners that another member of our media co-op made that were hung in the rotunda of the Capitol? And there was one day, I think it was when Governor Walker was lighting the Christmas tree, just before the ceremony began, the police forced the people who hung the banners to take them down. So Nicole got video of that, but she ran it backwards, so it looks like the police, because the police themselves took it down, so she ran the video backwards, so it looked like the police were actually putting up the Recall Walker banners, and it was just, you know, she's an amazing with satire, so we did that as kind of a spoof satire video. Arthur Cole Riggs, who has the excellent Scott Walker's Doing to My State Facebook page, and has just done some incredible video work over this last year. He's a member of the co-op, and his videos get up there. We've got Barbara Wiss, who's our Northern Bureau. She's from Madeline Island, and she writes about things going on up north and also about election integrity issues. She was really involved in the Kloppenburg recount last year and is putting out a book called Steal This Book, Not My Vote, that should be out. I think she's releasing it this weekend, and excerpts from that book are on her website. Yeah, we've just got some really great talent. And we're all doing it. We're doing it for free. We're doing it because we're compelled. We see our state being taken over by corporate interests through the medium of their, you know, Republican Party, Tea Party, legislators. And, you know, we're not doing this because we want to make a career in journalism. We're doing this because we desperately, desperately want to get this information out to people so they realize what is actually happening to our state. And what is happening is really, it's a corporate takeover and a destruction of our democratic institutions and processes, the likes of which have, you know, we've never seen here. And I think, you know, you're having Mike McCabe on later to talk about campaign finance and all that. But, you know, my analysis is what happened in the 2010 elections. Even we people in Wisconsin have such a strong faith in our historically clean and open democratic processes and elections that we didn't even see it coming. We didn't see that our political system could be so corrupted so quickly. And it just blindsided us. So we weren't on the ball as citizens looking out for, you know, election stealing or election rigging or, you know, the Waukesha County debacle and Kathy Nicholas and all of this dirty play in politics fueled by corporate money. We just weren't expecting it. And so we were blindsided. But few of us are waking up now and really trying to get the information out to folks. So a lot of the stories we write are based on, we show up to committee hearings, to legislative committee hearings, and that's when a lot of this dirty work gets done of, you know, taking over our state agencies and consolidating power in the office of the governor. So a lot of this just down and gritty work that gets done by our state legislature, we're the only ones covering it.
Because it's not sexy enough. It's not out there in front of people. It's that behind the door, smoke-filled rooms kind of stuff, and a lot of people don't want to get in there. And that's where the important stuff is, right? That's where all these bills are being written and handed off, and all these things are happening in our state legislature right now are right there.
For example, I mean, I just wrote an article yesterday or 2 days ago about the Government Accountability Board not being accountable, and it's not a soundbite thing. I mean, the headline, I couldn't really make the headline into 4 words, and I couldn't make the article in under 500 words. It's complicated stuff, and these people are counting on us not having the patience or the interest to read a, you know, 1,200-word article about how the Government Accountability Board is caving into Republican pressure and not upholding the interests of the citizens. But it's really, really critical that people understand what's happening because, you know, I mean, I've said jokingly, I don't want to be the person asking, why do I have to sew this, you know, Star of David on my jacket, you know? I mean, I want to be the person saying, well, look it, we don't have to get that far. We can stop it now. We have the information. You know, wake up, do something about it. So,
well, we have about 2 minutes left, and I just wanted to get your take on where you saw the future of citizen journalism going, and specifically with your Wisconsin Citizen Media Co-op.
Well, I mean, I see that it is the future. I mean, over the last 10 years, print newspapers and print newspapers have been going out of business, or if they haven't gone out of business, they've been merged into these enormous global media organizations who have, you know, centralized editorial policies and who aren't really they're propaganda / entertainment arms. They're not really informing the public. So I see citizen journalism as the future of informing ourselves about what's happening in the world, and that's really rooted in local communities, and that has to do with building on our relationship in community and getting information out to people we know about people we know. So it's not this distant thing that others are informing us about, but it's us informing each other about things we actually know. And we hope our organization and website will grow to be, you know, maybe one day financially sustainable through subscriptions or something, and that we might get compensated for our work. But we also hope that other members of the community will submit stories about things that they see happening in their communities, and that we can share this information in a network of citizen journalists such as yourself, such as other types of organizations like this around the country and around our state.
Well, it's important because it seems the mainstream media is focused a lot more on national and their interest that they're being told to cover. And it sounds like that you guys are covering the local immediate news that everyone needs to know. And it's things that necessarily aren't going to favor the people who have the money. So,
yeah, and it's local, but it has national resonance. I mean, it's local. We had stories about, you know, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum and you know, Gingrich's wife, and you know, we're covering national things from a local angle of where these stories hit the ground in reality. So are you.
Yeah.
And thank you very much for doing that, Sarah.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for doing all that you're doing. And I'd like to thank you for being on, and give us one more time, give us that website again that people can go read about the co-op.
It's WCMCOOP.com, and there's, you know, you can read about the co-op, but more importantly, you can read about what's going on in our state.
All right. Well, have a safe trip. I know you're going up north, and I want you to hold on for a minute. Bill, my producer, wants to speak with you. So hold on.
Okey-doke.
Have a great weekend.
Okay, and happy anniversary again.
Oh, thank you. That was Rebecca Kemble from the Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op and from the Progressive Magazine. We have a little bit of a break, but coming up next is Mike McKay from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. You are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Mysteriously,
and PR spokesmen orchestrate deniability. And now their widows, sons and daughters come to you and me and ask how much for the life of a miner. How much for the life of a miner.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz, we are now speaking with Mike McKay from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Sarah.
How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. I am doing good. Thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to have you on my one-year anniversary show. You've been such a great guest in the past, and I know today you're going to have so much information for us, so I'm really looking forward to this.
Oh, it's my pleasure to do it, and happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you. Now, Rebecca Campbell was just on. She told us about the lack of involvement of the GAB in the Walker Defense Fund. Do you have anything you can mention about that for a moment, or is that something you haven't looked into, or can you talk a little bit about the defense fund as a, in general?
Well, it's definitely something that we're looking at and looking at carefully, and it's a source of considerable frustration because, there's supposed to be transparency with all campaign funds, and if money gets raised for a legal defense fund, there ought to be transparency there too. People ought to know who's donating and how much they're donating to this kind of fund, and if the money is being properly used, and right now the public is being kept in the dark, and that's a problem. We've also got major concerns about whether there is adequate monitoring of the use of the money that Governor Walker raised during the period when he could engage in unlimited fundraising. From about November 15th of last year, when the recall petition drive was launched, until about a week ago, Governor Walker could accept donations of any size for his campaign account, right up until the time when the election was authorized last Friday, and you actually had an election date set for the recall election. From that, for about 4 months, he could accept donations of any size, but the deal was that it was supposed to specifically be for fighting the recall petition drive itself. And, you know, the law doesn't explicitly say so, but the GAB was allowing him to use it for television ads. He was trying to, you know, he was airing ads to discourage people from recalling him, and that was considered a legitimate expense. He could certainly use it for legal expenses to fight the recall, to pay lawyers to try to erect obstacles to the recall effort or challenge the petition signatures. But we can't really see that the GAB has any kind of system set up that the public can see as to whether all that money is now spent that he raised during that unlimited fundraising period and whether he spent it only for fighting the recall. So like as with the legal defense fund that he's set up, the public can't see whether this money is being used for the proper purpose. And in the case of the legal defense fund, we haven't been able to see exactly who's donating. So it is a source of real frustration. And I know that the GAB is up to its eyeballs with all kinds of work, you know, in administering these recall elections, evaluating all these petition signatures, verifying them. Of course, they've had sort of an on-again, off-again responsibility for enforcing this new voter ID law. So I appreciate the work the workload that this agency has and the burden that's on its shoulders, but it still leaves the public mighty frustrated when you can't see how this money is flowing. And, of course, the Democracy Campaign specializes in tracking the money in state politics, so it's particularly frustrating to us that we can't get the information we'd like to have to show the public exactly where this money's coming from.
Well, you guys are absolutely amazing at doing all the background dirty, trying to figure out these connections going on back there. You guys are very good at it. Now, my understanding was from the unlimited funds that it was actually used to be spent on the recall with, you know, looking at the signatures and specifically to help with that type of stuff with the recall. And he pushed that back on the GAB and on the on the taxpayers of the state. So
that's what the law, you know, that's what the law says, is that, and that was the whole justification for this law to allow this unlimited fundraising, was to give the target of a recall the resources needed to examine the signatures and to seek to verify whether the recall petition signatures were legitimate or not. And you're absolutely right. What the governor said is, that's not my job, that's the Government Accountability Board's job. And he turned around and used all that money for TV ads, discouraging people from recalling him instead. And, you know, and I think that was a loose interpretation of the law at best. I don't think that the Government Accountability Board should have allowed it, but you know, the GAB did do an awful lot to examine these signatures and verify them, even though the law doesn't make that the GAB's responsibility. It's the responsibility of the target of the recall election to do that. So the law wasn't followed in this year, and I think the GAB took a lot of unfair criticism from the right, saying that they weren't doing enough to examine these signatures and verify their authenticity, when the law actually says that that responsibility rests with the public official targeted for recall. So, you know, I think that the GAB has probably bent over backwards to try to accommodate Governor Walker and his supporters in all of this, and probably has gone to too great a length to satisfy them and address their criticisms. I just feel like the GAB should have just followed the law, and Governor Walker had that capacity to raise these unlimited donations, so he could have paid people to do this work that he was insisting the GAB needed to do.
Well, how much did he actually raise during that period of unlimited funds? Do you have an actual total from the time it started to last week?
We don't know yet what was raised between January 17th and the end of March, because we won't get another glimpse at the fundraising totals for a number of days yet. But what was reported through contribution raised as of January 17th, Governor Walker had raised $12.1 million for his campaign account up through January 17th. And he was raising millions during that unlimited fundraising period, but he was continuing, obviously, to raise donations of any size from January 18th through the end of March, until the recall election was actually authorized. But that period of time, roughly 2.5 month period, still remains to be seen. The next campaign finance reports that will be filed will be coming in the coming days, and that'll give us information about the rest of that period. I fully expect that Governor Walker will be probably up close to $20 million or beyond by the time we see this next report.
And how much of that was used in ads? I mean, how much of that has been put into TV, radio, newspaper, and where is it actually coalescing at?
Well, I know that Governor Walker has, you know, spent clearly in excess of $7 million in advertising, and it's overwhelmingly going on television. Television is the big driving force of you know, the advertising campaigning that is done by you know, candidates like Governor Walker and interest groups supporting him. And you know, and so I know he was over the $7 million mark. Again, once we see the next reports that are filed that cover this period from about January 18th through the roughly the end of March, we're going to have more detailed spending figures. But based on what we know from the ad buys on television stations, it's clearly over $7 million. It's going to the major commercial television stations in markets across the state. Obviously, heavy advertising in Milwaukee and the Madison market, up in the Fox Valley, the Green Bay market, but then also smaller markets like Eau Claire and La Crosse and Wausau. You know, it really is saturation advertising all over the state, and that's money going into the coffers of those TV stations. And so, you know, it's no wonder that those TV stations never talk about the problem of money in politics in our society. They never do stories about money's corrosive effects and the extent to which that money game is demolishing democracy. You know, it's one of the central crises in our society, and especially after the Citizens United ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court 2 years ago, that just put this money game on steroids. And you know, it's really a critical problem for our country and for our democracy. And television news doesn't touch it. They won't talk about it. Well, the reason is that they've got a huge conflict of interest. This has become a major cash cow for them, and these recall elections are great business for them because they ordinarily don't have elections, you know, in the summer of 2011 or you know, in the summer of 2012. There normally aren't elections. Well, there are elections because of these recalls. So that just gives them extra ad revenue. So this is really good for TV stations, not good for the viewing audience that has to endure all this trashy political advertising.
Well, how much of this media money, this TV ads, the saturation you talked about, affected getting out the vote?
Well, you know, I think that television advertising often is aimed at suppressing the vote. It's aimed at turning people's stomachs. It's aimed at making a lot of people who might be independent voters, who aren't, you know, aren't strong partisans, just sort of throw up their hands and say, "I don't want anything to do with this. A pox on both their houses. I don't like listening to either side." Well, and I think that's often the goal of this advertising. They want to whittle the electorate down to just their strong partisan base, and then it becomes a battle of who can turn out their base most effectively, who can excite their base, and that's why you see so much pandering to the extreme elements in political parties, because they're trying to get that strong ideological base stirred up and inflamed so that they'll turn out in high percentages. And then they, you know, they basically try to convince most other voters that they just don't want anything to do with the political process. And I think that's one of the tragedies of modern political advertising. You know, if airlines advertised the way politicians do, I don't think anybody would fly in America. You know, when you think about how this advertising goes, they're basically just convincing people that you should want nothing to do with politics or politicians. And, you know, can you imagine the airline industry or the automobile industry advertising like that? It's really craziness. But there is method to that madness. They really are trying to whittle the electorate down to the voters that they really can predict. They don't want the unpredictable voters, the ones who, you know, they're not sure how they'll vote. They want to make sure that the voters who show up on election day are the ones that they can predict, and if they turn out a higher percentage of their base than the other side does, they win the election. And so they've really got it down to a science. I think it's a very it's a very crooked and demeaning science. But that's the way they're playing this game.
So this advertising is actually intentional to suppress the vote for just the people that they would want to come out.
Oh, I think that that's it's self-evident. You know, you're not going to hear party operatives make that claim publicly very often. You know, they just say, "Hey, negative advertising works." You know, it persuades voters. Well, you know, one of the things that it does is it just turns people's stomachs, and when you get these really raunchy campaigns, there are a lot of people who just tune it out and turn it off and decide to throw up their hands and say, "What's the use? I don't even see the point in voting." And you know, that serves the purposes of the party establishment. They, you know, if they can whittle down the electorate to just those people who they know can be counted on to vote in a certain way, and they can whip their base up into a sufficient frenzy to make them a little bit more motivated than the other side's base, they win the election. And so, you know, I think when you watch the political behavior, you watch how they pander to the extreme elements and how they and how they use advertising to demean the other side. You know, I think it's pretty obvious what their overall aim is. Now, having said all that, I think TV ads are going to play a much smaller role in this upcoming recall election. I don't think they're going to have as much impact as they normally do. The reason I say that, Sarah, is that TV ads work best when they work in an information vacuum. When people don't know a lot about a race or don't know a lot about candidates, TV ads can have a tremendously potent impact. But there's no information vacuum with Scott Walker. People have been talking about him and the issues that led to this recall drive for over a year. It's been a subject of conversation between friends and neighbors and coworkers. People have had conversations at the dinner table at during family holidays. People have run into folks in the dead of winter out on sidewalks and in parking lots circulating petitions for his recall. People have been living and breathing this for over a year, and people know Scott Walker, and they know the issues that have led to all this turmoil. And people have pretty much decided they either love him or they hate him, and there's not much in between. So he's spent $7 million on TV ads and really hasn't moved the public approval needle an inch. In fact, the last poll I saw was done by Rasmussen, which is a Republican polling firm. It's actually shown him slipping a little bit in his public approval. So, you know, all this, these millions of dollars of ads really haven't moved people, and it certainly hasn't helped Walker's cause. Now, the public is very sharply divided in this state. It just looks like Wisconsin's been split down the middle. But he hasn't gotten much value for all those millions of dollars of ads, and I think it's because there's no information vacuum. People have been talking about this for a long time. They know this race. They know the issues that are at stake here. They have formed very strong opinions about Scott Walker, either positive or negative. And so I really don't expect that TV ads are going to have the impact that they normally do. That's not going to stop these interest groups and candidates from spending tens of millions of dollars on the ads. They always do it. They're told by consultants that it's the only way. Of course, the consultants profit because they get a cut. They get a cut of the ads that they place with the TV stations. But I think there's going to be a lot of money wasted, to be honest with you. And I think it's really going to come down to the ground game and who is better at turning out voters.
It's actually interesting that we're talking about all this money that he's throwing into these TV ads, and I want to actually ask you in a minute which TV stations he's actually throwing the money to. I'm assuming there's some more than others, but it's interesting that it just doesn't seem to be working. It seems like the grassroots messaging system of going from neighbor to neighbor seems to be just as effective as some of these ads that he's putting out, because the time has been long enough that they could get the information out to people that way.
Hey, when neighbors are talking to neighbors, when coworkers are talking, when people when people are having conversations and a race or a candidate is on their radar screen, that's the most effective thing. People trust what they hear from a neighbor a lot more than what they trust from a negative political ad. It's when there's not, when people aren't engaged, when people aren't talking to each other, and when there really isn't very many people thinking about a race, that's when TV ads become so much more powerful. And, you know, here in Wisconsin, we've got a very engaged electorate right now that is very involved in talking to friends and neighbors and coworkers and sons and daughters and grandchildren and you know, there's just a lot of talk going on. That's going to minimize the impact of the ads. As for where it's going, the biggest, the highest rated stations in every market get the most money. You know, you take any market, the station that has the most eyeballs in that market gets the lion's share of the advertising. That's the predictor is who has the highest ratings gets the most advertising.
Are you seeing any advertising done with radio and with a newspaper as well? Are you seeing it just the bulk of it on TV? Because that's
very little in newspaper. Very little in newspapers. Some on radio. It pales in comparison to what we see on TV. A growing area, a very fast growing area, is actually internet advertising, placing ads on various websites. That's an area that is growing exponentially. It still is a tiny expense compared to TV advertising. TV is the dominant medium of political expression in campaigns. Internet's growing fast, but it's still in its infancy, really. Radio gets some, newspaper gets very little. The other big area is actually direct mail. The junk mail that shows up in our mailboxes is a big campaign expense. Nothing compared to television. Maybe it could rival radio in some campaigns, but that's the other big area. Some money is spent on these robocalls, the automated messages that show up in your voicemail or on your answering machine. But again, those are incredibly cheap to produce and to disseminate to a mass audience. These are random digit dialing systems that are automated dialing systems that place these messages. Incredibly cheap to do, so not a lot of money is spent on it, but an awful lot of annoying messages end up getting placed on voicemail systems.
Do you think, just wondering from all the stuff I've heard from other people, do you think the robocalls are helping or actually hurting the people who use them?
You know, they keep using them, and they've got consultants telling them that it's effective because it's cheap, and the political operatives, the experts keep saying that it's a great tool for the get out to vote effort. I find them incredibly annoying. I can't imagine that people have a good feeling about robocalls. So I can't imagine that it's really a wise use of money. But I know that the political consultants are telling candidates that it's a great tool right around Election Day to remind people that they need to get out and vote. Again, they try to target those people that they can predict their behavior, and they want those people at the polls. But, you know, these things are really a blight on the political process, if you ask me. It's just a really bleak kind of campaigning, and I can't imagine that it's a real good use of money, but they still spend the money every election on those ghastly robocalls.
Well, Mike McCabe, thank you so much for being on. As always, it was a fascinating half hour with you. I learned so much just talking with you. We didn't get to half the stuff I wanted to, but I'd like you to come back in about a month's time because you'll get a little bit of time to go through the finance reports from the recalls, and I'm very interested to see what the total amount of everything is. So,
I'd be happy to do that, Sarah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on. Have a great weekend and happy Easter.
All right. You too.
Thanks.
Good talking with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
definitely. Good talking to you, too. That was Mike McKay with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. And we're taking a quick break, and after we come back, I will have Yuri Rafkin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Got money, I'll do anything for you. Got money, just tell me what you want me to. Got money, nail me up against the wall. Got money, don't want everything.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show. It's Sarah Schultz, and we are speaking now with Yuri Rafkin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Hello, Yuri. Thank you so much for being on the one-year anniversary a little late today.
Hey, congratulations, Sarah. I think doing anything for a year takes commitment, and doing a radio show takes a lot of effort every week, and you've done it. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, and thank you for doing your Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Is it weekly now? It was daily for a while. I'm not sure. It might still be daily, but you do a lot of work with that, and thank you for keeping that up.
You know, it switched mostly to Facebook at this point, but like most of us, we do it because we just can't help ourselves. You know, I was talking with Steph company from I will get more likes than Scott Walker, and it's amazing because it's we just do it because we love it, because we want to share the information. So, hey, let's cut back to the news and catch up because we don't have a lot of time this morning. We have some great people running for governor against Scott Walker. However, the most important thing is that it could be you, me, or Ken Beer that could be the Democratic nominee, and it shouldn't make any difference because it's all about Walker. We have right now Kathleen Falk, former Dane County Executive, Secretary of State Douglas Follett, and State Senator Kathleen Weinhout of Alma, and of course, Mayor of Milwaukee Tom Barrett. Those are all good people, and everybody has their favorites. And I think we have about a month to determine who is going to be the nominee. And after that, it shouldn't matter one bit because, in the end, it's about Walker. So I'm going to be hammering the message that don't forget this is not a regular election. This is a recall election, and it's a very important one at that. So we have to win. So we'll start with that. And so far, it seems like Barrett's in the race, and I think we're getting a good balance of candidates. I know that people are wishful that there were others, and you know what, this is real life, and sometimes things figure into people's plans, other times they don't. Sometimes people feel they can make a better difference wherever they are, and you know, we have to respect that. But we have four candidates, and I think for, you know, democracy, this is really good.
We have five. I do want to throw in the independent candidate. So we have the four Democrats and the one independent candidate as well.
Well, in that case, I don't know. Are you referring to Arthur?
No, he's running as a Lincoln Republican. I was talking about five on our side. There's the independent. It's Harry Trivedi. And then you've got Doug LaFollette, and you have Kathleen Weinhout, Senator Kathleen Weinhout. You have Kathleen Falk and Mayor Tom Barrett.
Because I'm planning on throwing my support to the best of my ability behind my favorite Lincoln Republican, Arthur Cole Riggs, because I think that giving, you know, if we could get Walker to lose in the primary, that would just be hilarious. And, well, I don't think that's going to happen, but nonetheless, my props to Arthur for standing up and, you know, just causing Walker a little more headache and hopefully distracting him from hurting our state in the meantime. So, and you know what, and I just love Arthur's sense of humor about this whole thing, because we're dealing with some very serious issues, but you always got to find time to smile. And so I give Arthur a lot of credit for that. And he's putting in the work. He's got a Facebook page, got a lot of fans. You know he's going to do the work. He's been working nonstop for the last year and a half.
Yes, he has. And he's got a petition out for signatures, and he's got himself in a Lincoln outfit. I wonder if he gets on the ballot, if he'll actually go to one of the governor forums in his Lincoln outfit to debate Scott Walker if he gets in.
If anybody would, that Arthur will find a way to stand out in any crowd.
Yes.
More power to him. So, moving on, we have Wisconsin primary, GOP primary that took place last Tuesday. That was rather interesting because, of course, Romney won. Although, I got to say, here in Janesville, we had a rally organized by someone I know for Rick Santorum. And during that rally, Mr. Santorum almost said some horrible things. And instead, there's just a video of him not quite saying a really bad word in regards to Barack Obama. It didn't help, didn't hurt. I don't know if anybody's paying much attention to Mr. Santorum. He obviously didn't win. But when on election night, I came up to this man that I know who was sitting there counting the votes, because we're all gathered at the courthouse at Rock County watching the results coming in. And I said, hey, man, just wanted to let you know that as far as I know, every Democrat voted for Santorum. And he said, hey, thank you. I'll take it, because you know what? He'll need it every vote. Still didn't help. Romney still won. But you got to give it to Scott Walker, because you – schedule a GOP presidential primary on the same day as the spring election, boy, you're going to really affect the results of the races. Because even though a lot of these races are nonpartisan, and particularly for those that may be partisan, we have pretty much in this politicized climate, everybody knows who is liberal, who is progressive, who is conservative, and where do people stand? And when you have a lot of Republicans turning out, even though who's going to get excited about Mitt Romney, haven't found that person yet, but you're going to have a lot of Republicans turning out for the GOP primary, and it affected the races. So now on city council in Janesville, for instance, we have more conservatives than we could have had otherwise. It's unfortunate because it's our communities that are at stake, but scheduling is important. So we have Romney that won the primary and lots of conservatives that won local races, although there's a couple of exceptions, notably in Madison and close to us in Beloit, where some really good progressive causes and candidates won. So the battle goes on another day.
Beloit surprises me. Now, I know in Jefferson County and Walworth County, every progressive candidate that almost every progressive candidate that ran actually lost. However, in Dane County, the county board became majority progressive, which is interesting because Rick Santorum won Dane County as well. But so we're seeing a polarization of the states. Those areas that are conservative end up voting in more conservative people, whereas those areas that were already progressive and more on the liberal side end up voting in more people who were liberal.
Exactly.
And actually, I was just going
to
say, and I heard a quote saying that with this last election, it actually broke the back of the GOP in Dane County.
Wow. Well, that's always good to hear. The other thing is that looking at the map of where the votes came from, Romney really ran out the score in around Milwaukee area, the same as Walker, where you get those Republican votes in those suburbs and you just run out the score and you offset the votes that are going to come from elsewhere in the state, because most of the state actually voted for Santorum, but it's that Milwaukee area that helped Romney win the primary decisively.
And that's where Romney does best, is in the cities, whereas Santorum does best in the country. Why, in your opinion, why didn't progressives show up in some of these other areas?
You know, because you're just looking at the primary, Barack Obama got 98% of the vote. So there really wasn't as much outside of the areas that are historically politically active and gotten more so, such as Dane County. The rest of the state is, you know, people have their lives to live and everybody's paying attention to the recall. But the spring election, you know, unless you're selecting your presidential candidate, which is what Republicans are doing, the incentive just is not the same. And that's unfortunately pretty straightforward there. Moving on with the other news, we have just about an hour ago, I saw a news report come across that Wisconsin Capitol is actually going to cost $200,000 to clean, which is about $7.3 million less than originally figured. And it's almost a chuckle because I think we knew that. But nonetheless, seeing that come out through an official news source, it's something to acknowledge. And so there we go.
I want to point out with that is when they announced the big number, it got all sorts of news press. And then they wait about a year and then they release the real number and no one's going to cover it. So what you're going to hear from people who are not as informed are it costs $7 million to clean it. Well, not really, but you're not getting out the actual number. So go ahead, because we have about 2 minutes left.
All right. So just to clarify there, we have $43,000 that's for repairing tape damage. But now we know what that actually costs. Okay, we have a couple of other things that's worth mentioning for sure. First of all, Kathy Nicholas is handing off election duties, which is just really good news for democracy in our state, because it's about time that all of our elections don't come down to Waukesha County. And if they do, we have to be able to feel at least somewhat reliable about the results that are going to come out of there. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't pay attention to Waukesha County or Waukesha County, because it just really, the fact that Kathy was forced to hand off her election duties just highlights the problems that are present there. But for now, with elections coming up and up and up and up, it's a good news. And the other thing I wanted to mention,
I was going to say just another nickname that my friend Waukesha Wong calls Waukesha is Mordor. So you can name whatever
well,
one you want.
I also like Miami-Dade of the North. Then we also have Unite Against the War on Women, huge rally that's going to be coming up to Madison And I guess all of us, the Caterpillars, should come together on April 28th, right after the Crazy Legs race in Madison. And I'm actually, I got to say, I'm thrilled to announce that I will be speaking at this rally, and I'm really proud to be a member of this kind of a rock star lineup. So I really looking forward to that.
Well, and you weren't on before, but I did touch on it at the beginning, and I did mention your name as one of the speakers. So I'm really excited. I'm going to be out there as well, and I'm really excited to have you out there, and I can't wait to hear what you're going to say. So,
well, thanks. Now I'm, you know, and I've been nervous already, and now your listeners know. So my gosh, I have to say something, you know, good. But it's going to be a great rally, and I'm just really thrilled to be part of it. And we have some amazing people speaking there as well, and I hope that everybody comes out.
I hope so, too. Now, what do you see coming up down the line for next week?
You know, it seems like Barack Obama is now running against our hometown Janesville's Paul Ryan's budget versus Mitt Romney, who is himself just a standalone train wreck. And so now it seems that the president is running against Janesville's candidate. So we'll see where that goes. And of course, recalls. Recall. We have from Lori Compass to fake Dems. So we have a lot of exciting things happening. And so let's see where the election takes us.
Well, we have that lawsuit, too, for the fake Dems as well. We have that, the lawyer was Levinson, and I just took it down. I had it up for a while, but they said that it actually takes away, and I'm going to talk with Melissa from the DPW later about this, but it said that it actually breaks a Wisconsin statute by running fake Democrats.
Well, the attorney's alleging that they're committing criminal election fraud. So we'll see where that goes, but among the requirements for running a candidate in the partisan primary, one is required to file a declaration of candidacy, and that specifically says they're representing the political party for which there is to take the primaries to take place. And that statement must be made under oath. So we now have people who are admittedly saying they're running this just to slow things down. So they're not representing the Democratic Party values, so they could be committing election fraud. So we'll see what judges think.
And as far as Ryan goes, I'm actually rather excited to see him almost run for vice president. As someone who's in his district, as someone who appreciates all the finer things he's done in this district, like the lack of businesses and the fact that they've run out like rats on a sinking ship, he has not seemed to be bringing anything back, but yet he wants to destroy Medicare. Now, with all that,
yeah,
having him run as VP and be out of his area while he's having a campaign, that really kind of makes me kind of excited. So I'm really hoping that Romney does pick Paul Ryan. They were so close. They were so cute together, handing out the free sandwiches illegally. And, you know, I just thought it would be really good to have that continue.
Well, we should take this opportunity to give a shout-out to Rob Zerbon, who is running against Paul Ryan and is by far the most serious contender Paul has ever seen.
Yes. So can you hold on for a second? I'm going to take a quick break, Yuri.
Sure.
We are listening to we're going to take a quick break, and you are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. When Paul Ryan introduced his savage budget proposal last month, one item in it failed to get the attention it deserved, and that's his proposal to allow the interest on 8 million federally subsidized student loans to double in just a couple months. On July 1st, the rate's going to jump from 3.4% to 6.8% unless Congress decides to act. Paul Ryan is perfectly content to let these rates rise. Not Tammy Baldwin, though. The Wisconsin representative now running for Senate introduced a budget amendment that would have kept those rates affordable. "Budgets reflect our nation's priorities and values," she said. "The Ryan budget provides tax breaks for the wealthiest while imposing an additional burden on those who can afford it the least, recent college graduates entering a difficult job market." Graduating seniors on average now carry a college debt of more than $25,000. It's a debt that cripples their opportunities. But Paul Ryan and the Republicans in the House don't care about that. They blocked Tammy Baldwin's amendment last week. Like Rick Santorum, they don't want to make college affordable to all. And that's real elitism right there. I'm Matt Rothschild, And that's how I see it.
You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz. And before I get to Scott Ross, I have one quick call here. Hello, Randy. How are you doing this morning?
Great, Sarah. How are you doing? I don't want to take up a lot of your time. I just wanted to, I saw it was the 1 year anniversary of your show, and I absolutely love it. I continue you. I hope you have many more years, and I get all the ones I miss on iTunes for free.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. And Randy, you are an amazing activist and organizer, and thank you for everything that you are doing, and I hope you keep it up too.
Thanks. I'll see you on the streets.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Bye. So now I'm going to get to, that was, and I want to thank Randy. Thank you so much for calling in. That was so nice of you to do that. I'm going to get to Mr. Ross here. Before you say anything, I have an intro for you, so let's hold on for a second.
Are we talking about Kathleen Falk and the quid pro quo with We Act, the Teachers Union? Are we talking about Kathleen Falk and the other gubernatorial candidates that are now lining up to run against Governor Walker? Is that what this is about, Kathleen Falk? Is that what you're talking about? Is that what this discussion is about today, about Kathleen Falk? Because if it is, I'd love to talk about that. We'll talk about it all day if you want.
I couldn't think of a better introduction than to have Senator Scott Fitzgerald introduce you and introduce Kathleen Falk. So I'm speaking with Scott Ross, who is, you're the communications director, are you not, of the Kathleen Falk campaign?
Yes, I am, Sarah, and thanks again for having me. I can't believe that on a day when you are celebrating your one-year anniversary, you would think that it was that I was a guest to be on your show. So that really, thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You have been on the show a couple times before. You've been amazing, and I know you're crazy busy right now with the campaign, and I wanted to get you on, and thank you for being on. So what is going on with the campaign these days? How is the signature collection going? What's going on?
Oh, well, Sarah, it's going great. We have people all across Wisconsin who are going to KathleenFalk.com to download nomination papers. They're signing. They're having their friends sign. They're having their family sign. If your listeners want to get involved in that, we just need you to make sure you return those to our office, which is at 836 East Main Street in Madison, by Monday the 9th, or to mail to our P.O. box, which is 8832 Madison 53708, and that stuff is on our website at KathleenFalk.com. So if you have listeners who haven't signed nomination papers yet or who want to help Kathleen undo the damage that Governor Walker has done to the state of Wisconsin, by all means, go to KathleenFalk.com and download those papers. But it's going great. I mean, we've got, you know, tons of signatures. We want to get as many as possible, and it's certainly humbling to see the kind of public outpouring that's come in support of Kathleen's campaign and what she, and the things that she will do to move Wisconsin forward and really, Sarah, bring us back together. You know, Governor Walker has so divided this state. He tore us apart with the fact that he wasn't honest with us, the fact that he attacked the values that we hold dear, education, health care, clean air and water, workers' rights, voters' rights, and women's rights. And so this movement, you know, it's so critical that we undo what Governor Walker did and that we remove him from office. And I believe that Kathleen Falk is the best candidate not only to defeat Governor Walker, but also to, again, restore honesty, transparency, and accountability to the governor's office once and for all.
Now, how are you in the Falk campaign countering the Dane County-centric that her critics keep trying to put on her?
Well, it's long, you know, I mean, that's a Republican talking point. You know, they long say you can't win if you're from Dane County. And we have had elected officials, Democratic elected officials, on the whole, you know, across the spectrum of Democratic candidates, run and win statewide in Wisconsin. Everybody from Governor Doyle, who, you know, ran five times as both the Attorney General and Governor and won, and, Senator Russ Feingold, who won three elections, and who lives here in Middleton. I mean, it's a Republican talking point. But again, we know what the Republicans will do when it comes to this stuff. They will distort the facts, they will deceive the public, and they will be dishonest with us because they don't care what happens to the middle class and people in need here in the state of Wisconsin. They serve the corporate interests who put them into power, the Koch brothers, ALEC, big out-of-state Wall Street interests. That's what we're all fighting against. And that's why this movement, you know, continues to be so strong, so energetic, and so motivated, because every single day we see them violate another one of our values in you know, to further this national extreme Tea Party agenda, but also to take away the power from the middle class here in the state of Wisconsin. Governor Walker started it when he gave out over $2 billion in tax breaks to corporations, and you know, without any measure that it would create jobs. And what's the result been? Wisconsin lost more jobs in 2011 than any other state in the nation at the same time, during the same year that the national economy grew by 2 million jobs. It is just a record of deception and failure, and the people of Wisconsin are rejecting it.
Speaking of lack of jobs, actually, now the Republicans have succeeded in vilifying Madison, Dade County, and even a little bit of Milwaukee, but mostly Madison, Dane County. How is the impact, that impact tourism and small businesses, and how does that affect around Wisconsin?
Well, I think, you know, I think the most important thing is that people have woken up to the fact that, you know, a long time ago, you know, when Governor Walker, quote unquote, dropped the bomb and attacked the rights of 175,000 working men and women in Wisconsin, dedicated public servants, teachers, nurses, snowplow drivers, you know, the people who make, you know, who make Wisconsin a great place to live, work, and raise a family. When they attacked those values, they ignited a fire in this state, you know, that, you know, the vast, you know, for all the bad that they did, the good in terms of bringing the people of Wisconsin, you know, to recognize just how big the threat is, to get motivated, to get mobilized, to undo, you know, while all the nation is watching, the most harmful extremist agenda that we've ever seen a state endure, as we have under Governor Walker. And again, you know, the reason I support Kathleen and the reason I'm working for Kathleen is because I know that she is the candidate who is best prepared on day one to begin to undo the damage that Governor Walker did. She's a fair but tough county executive for 14 years, you know, balancing budgets every single year, but making a priority of serving the people who needed it most. You know, everything from her, you know, groundbreaking programs, her early childhood initiative, a groundbreaking program that helped move kids out of poverty, helped move moms and dads into the workforce, and to keep them in the workforce and move them up the economic ladder. I mean, this is the essence of what government is supposed to be about. It is supposed to be about helping us do the best with what we have, with all of the people, you know, the unbridled enthusiasm, people who really want to work, and making sure that they capitalize on that. And I think that, another part of that is embodied in Kathleen's commitment to education. You know, give you a good example. Governor Walker cut our technical college system by $72 million. Technical college system, which just last year celebrated its centennial. Wisconsin was the first state in the country to offer technical college training. And yet Governor Walker assaulted that very value that we have in terms of protecting education as part of his $1 billion in cuts to public education. And Kathleen has a plan. It's the Invest in Success plan. It's helping people get the skills and training they need so they can get the jobs that are out there. We have 35,000 unfilled jobs currently in the state of Wisconsin. And it does it by just simply undoing one of Governor Walker's many corporate tax breaks, the one that allows businesses to write off expenses in Wisconsin if they have a business in other states so they can avoid their obligation to the taxpayers of Wisconsin. You know, that's not fair. It's not the Wisconsin way, and it's a violation of our values. And that's why Kathleen, you know, I believe is the best candidate. She offers that strong contrast with Walker, you know, in terms of her success as a county executive, her success for 20 years in protecting our right to clean air and water as the state's former public intervener, contrast with Governor Walker's corporate extremist national Tea Party agenda. And I know that's why she's got the momentum she's got, why she's got people, you know, endorsing her candidacy from all walks of life all across Wisconsin, working men and women, women's rights organizations, environmental groups, young progressives. They're building that big tent that is needed to be built in order to defeat Scott Walker, because that's what this is all about, right? That's what this fight is about. We must defeat Scott Walker. We must turn back what he has done to Wisconsin. And most importantly, we must move forward.
What's one of the things that she's going to do to help bring the state together and help move us forward and get us back on the right direction?
Absolutely. One of the things, you know, about Kathleen is that she believes that language is important. And when she talks with people, she does it in a respectful way. And she has said that,
you know, for instance, she has a transparency and ethics plan that's going to take big steps to bring Wisconsin back together, because it's going to open the doors of sunshine into what goes on in state government. She's going to publish her schedule every day. I mean, simple things like that mean a lot. Governor Walker's schedule is not public. He doesn't release it until like weeks after, you know, the month has gone. We deserve to know where Governor Walker is. You know, the only reason we know he's been traveling across the country, crisscrossing and grabbing up as much, you know, money from Texas billionaires, New York billionaires, Florida millionaires, Missouri billionaires, is because people are so organized on Facebook, and every time he goes somewhere, there's a protest against him. These things, you know, steps like that, openness, accountability, transparency. But one of the things Kathleen said is that day after the election, she's going to go to Waukesha, where, you know, Waukesha County, you know, it's a Republican county. It's 2-1 Republicans. She is going to go there to start this healing process, to bring us back together. And for Kathleen, it's particularly personal because she grew up in Waukesha County after moving there from being born in Milwaukee. So these steps, you know, not shutting out the public, listening to the public, being honest with the public and being open with the public, those are the steps that can allow the state of Wisconsin to have an honest discussion about where we move forward as a state, what has not worked, what has worked, and what we can do better. And that's the conversation that Kathleen is going to have with the people of Wisconsin. That's how she's going to bring us back together.
And Walker has done a lot at vilifying the unions, and I know Kathleen has been or endorsed by many of the unions out there because of her work that she's done in Dane County. Is that playing for or against her right now because of the constant vilification of Walker getting on and doing that?
Well, I think that, you know, Kathleen is very proud to have earned the endorsement of literally every organization that's endorsed a candidate against Governor Walker. And I think there's well over a dozen now that have jumped on her train because of her experience and the fact that they know she can get things done and how she has worked with them in the past. You know, every time Governor Walker says big labor, you can almost see the bead of sweat rolling down his head because he knows that it's not just labor. It's working men and women. It's environmentalists. It's pro-choice advocates. It's women's rights advocates. It's conservationists. It's young people. It's this movement that is going to oust him from office. That is what he is most terrified about. You know, the Republicans have a long, you know, it's very Karl Rovian. You know, he didn't invent it, but he certainly perfected it. And that's the idea of taking somebody's strength and trying to make it a weakness. And the fact is Kathleen has earned and very proud to have earned the endorsement of every single organization which is endorsed against Governor Walker. And she is not going to apologize for having the support of working men and women in the state of Wisconsin. The question we need to be asking ourselves is, why doesn't Governor Walker have any of that support? Well, we know why, because he doesn't care about the middle class in Wisconsin. He only cares about the corporate special interests that financed and backrolled his ascension to power.
Now, do you see the state Republicans, especially Scott Fitzgerald, Voss, Darling, Grossman, doing to a new Democratic governor what the Republicans did to Obama on a national level? Do you see that being a problem for Kathleen if she were to get into the governor's position?
Well, I think one of the things to remember is when we defeat Governor Walker, the next governor will have a mandate to undo what he's done. And Kathleen will certainly work respectfully and tough and negotiate with, you know, whoever is in charge of the legislature, be it Democrats or Republicans. But she will move forward a progressive agenda for the state of Wisconsin. We cannot afford another day of what Governor Walker's policies are. His drastic cuts to education, over $1 billion. You know, the fact that our technical college system has been gutted, the fact that the University of Wisconsin has been cut by over $300 million, and that students are getting another $100 million in new tuition costs as a result of Governor Walker's choices. And that translates, of course, into hundreds of millions of dollars of new student loan debt. And Kathleen's going to do something about that. That's the, you know, so it's it it is you know, it comes down to who will be able to move this agenda forward. And I think Kathleen's record shows that she can do it because she did it for the last 35 years.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it. Thank you for talking about the Kathleen Falk campaign. And I hope to have you on at least one more time before this campaign is done.
Sarah, anytime, you just let me know. And again, congratulations. I mean, what you have done in putting together a show without, you know, the big financial corporate support that the right-wing radio machine has with Clear Channel and all that. I mean, it's just phenomenal what you've been able to do. And you really, you know, hopefully we'll see shows like yours springing up, not just in Wisconsin, but all across the nation. So, you know, Kathleen wanted to make sure I congratulated you on that as well, but I wanted to do it too.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I love to see more in Wisconsin. We need more voices outside of Wisconsin. We just need to get our voice heard and out there. So thank you so much. Keep up the fight, and I'll talk with you soon.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you. That was Scott Ross with the Kathleen Falk campaign. You can get more information at kathleenfalk.com. Now we're going to have a quick break, and then after that we're going to go to Melissa Baldoff. She is with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. And we're probably just going to finish out the show with her. So you're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Crank up the Model T, he sent the future back. the future back. He sent 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 the future back. Sent the future back. He sent the future back. He sent the future back.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz, and I'm going to finish out the show with Melissa Baldoff with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Welcome from, thank you for being on the show today, and especially with it being my one-year anniversary show, I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's great to be on to celebrate 1 year of you sharing the message with everybody here in Wisconsin, so thanks.
All right, well, thank you. Now, I want to start off with the latest on the Romney Cousins sub-incident. What is going on with that?
Well, you know, Subgate, as we like to call it, is under investigation by the Waukesha County District Attorney's Office. They do have an investigator working on it. And just a little background for anyone who doesn't know what happened here. When Mitt Romney was in town with Paul Ryan by his side, campaigning for the Republican primary on Tuesday. They had a campaign event in Waukesha at a Cousins Subs where they were handing out subs to voters. And Wisconsin law plainly prohibits giving anything of value, anything more than a dollar in value to induce someone to vote or not vote or to get them out to the polls. So this is just clearly a violation of the election bribery law, caught on video by multiple sources. So we think it's pretty clear evidence. And this has been picked up by, you know, the national news, NBC, ABC. This has been Washington Post. This has been all over the place. And something that we find really problematic is that the state's largest newspaper, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, to my knowledge to date, has not seen fit to talk about a presidential candidate and a member of Congress, in what looks like committing election bribery, and they have not seen fit to talk about this yet. So that's something we're pretty upset about.
Now, why is it that the right-wing talking points and the right-wing media is saying this is much ado about nothing? What would have been the case if President Obama was the one to have actually been out there doing that?
Oh, well, we can all imagine. I mean, they'd be, you know, ready to impeach him over this. I mean, this is just a ridiculous set of standards. And I think what it goes to show is that this Republican Party, and it starts from the top and it goes all the way down, They just don't think the rules apply to them. They think the rules are for little people. They're for people who don't matter, you know, for, you know, someone in, you know, inner city Milwaukee who wants to go vote. I mean, they have to jump through hoops to be able to get the proper ID and sign up early and all this. And, you know, they make sure that they have to just go through a lot to exercise their rights. But then when the Republicans break the law, it's no big deal. And I think a lot of people will remember that last summer there was a somewhat of a scandal, as they like to portray it, in Barbecue for Votes, where a progressive organization had a party and had people registering to vote in an early vote drive. And the right-wing machine just went nuts over this. This was covered for days, if not weeks, by the Journal Sentinel, by all the major outlets in Wisconsin, with the McIver Institute and media trackers just in a frenzy over this, filing complaints and just, you know, alleging that this was so outrageous. And it got huge coverage. And now when this happens, and this is not some organization just operating independently. This was the Republican front runner for president and a member of Congress breaking this law. So it's just ridiculous that they are so silent now when it's their own people doing it. They have nothing to say.
Well, it, as it was pointed out on, I don't know if it was Ed or Rachel's show, that Paul Ryan is a Wisconsin congressman. This is a Wisconsin law. He, of all people, should know that what the laws are in electioneering in Wisconsin. And he's the one just happily handing them out along with Romney. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I'll just bring up one more thing about this. Another reason that Paul Ryan has every reason to know that this should not have happened. About 10 years ago, there was another similar incident when Jim Doyle was running for governor against Scott McCollum, and it was christened Kringlegate. You know, there was somebody, a volunteer, not on staff for Jim Doyle, who, you know, was running an event where Kringle and soda was served, and at that time, the Republicans just went nuts over this. And Paul Ryan, this was in his district, and the volunteer also said he had run similar events for Paul Ryan. So, you know, this was something they were aware of. And at that time, I mean, the Republican talking point on this was that it was appalling, it was a deep shame to Wisconsin, you know, that it was Chicago-style vote buying, and they just went crazy over this. And now, again, like I said, it's just, it's absolutely silent from that side, and they have nothing to say when it's their own people breaking the law.
Well, as always, that seems to be the case. Now, there's other shenanigans going on than just that. You've got also the Republicans running fake Dems, and these guys are not, I'm not putting a legend out there, because one of the guys, I think it was Ellerman, who's running against Lori Compass, actually came out and said, yeah, the GOP asked me to run, so I'm going to. So I'm not even allegedly this anymore. This is what's going on. And there was a We Are Wisconsin got a lawyer to say how running the fake Dems is against Wisconsin State Statute Section 12.13.3A. Where does the Democratic Party stand on this?
Well, I mean, we're certainly, you know, waiting to see what the opinion is going to be on, you know, whether or not this is unlawful. And, you know, whether or not it's found to be unlawful or not, I mean, this is offensive to Wisconsin democracy. This is just a shame for the voters who are ready to, you know, they are ready to go and cast their vote against these failed policies and the failed leadership of Scott Walker and his Republican Party. And the fact that this, you know, this party is willing to potentially break the law and definitely waste taxpayer money it's offensive. And it's offensive to the people, it's offensive to our Constitution, it's offensive to democracy, and it's unfortunately not surprising. We saw what they did last year in the summer Senate recall elections. It's just kind of more dirty tricks from them, and, you know, they're the ones that keep saying, oh, there's going to be all these, you know, fake signatures, and there's not, and the recall process is a fraud, and it was certainly not. It was the most successful petition drive in U.S. history, and they're the ones that are committing these bad acts. They brought in violent out-of-state felons last year. They attempted to bribe people with shots of alcohol. So it's just, it's unfortunate that this is what we've come to expect from them, because they know they can't win on their policies and on their record.
How do the Republicans square taxpayer money with their claims about the recall and then engage fake candidates? I mean, especially on the governor's side. They have a fake candidate running for governor. We already have four people plus an independent. Do we actually need to spend more taxpayers' money and throw in another fake candidate when we are already going to have a governor primary?
It's absurd, and it is. It is a waste of money, and they don't seem to care. And it's what is also offensive to me is their terminology. They're not calling them fake candidates, but they're calling them protest candidates. And a lot of our friends in the media are letting them get away with saying protest candidates. They're not protesting anything. This is fake. It's fraudulent. It's offensive, and it's just not acceptable for Wisconsin.
And it could possibly be illegal, according to
absolutely. I definitely will we'll wait to see what the Government Accountability Board finds about this, because it certainly seems, if it's not illegal, it seems like it should. It's just not right.
And it's just interesting to me that they're still calling themselves a fiscally responsible party when they keep throwing away taxpayers' money on things that doesn't need to happen. Now, we have about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to get to the war on women. And I know Reince Priebus, Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman, talked about how the war on women was a media-created event. How about we start with that?
Right. Well, I don't know what is more offensive about what he said, that, you know, he's saying that this is a fiction and it's imagined, or, you know, he likened it to a war on caterpillars. So, I mean, is he calling women caterpillars? It's absolutely ridiculous that this party, who has been attacking women's rights from the moment they got into power last year in Wisconsin, would try to claim that they are not engaging in a war on women. And every step of the way, every chance they have gotten, they have tried to deny women access to health care. They are taking away the ability of women and their doctors to make medical decisions. And they are treating women like second-class citizens.
So how is it then that Mr. Priebus can come out and actually say that this is a media-created event, when it's obviously all these bills are being passed? It's not just in Wisconsin. This is a nationwide attempt to take away women's health care and such. How is it that he can come out and actually say something like that? And with a straight face, actually, was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, I really don't know how anyone could say that with a straight face. I mean, you've got this, you know, like you said, it's all over the country. And here in Wisconsin, you know, it is absolutely a battleground here. And, you know, Scott Walker's Republican Party has advanced this crazy personhood bill that was too radical for Mississippi voters. And it would outlaw common forms of birth control and fertility treatment. It would criminalize abortion across the board, even in cases of rape and incest or if a woman's life was in danger. So I think this just shows these people don't value women as equal partners in decision making. And it comes to be that these policies are harmful to women and harmful to families. I mean, you see Rush Limbaugh making his really degrading and insulting comments about Sandra Fluck, and that's terrible that he's insulting young women, but this isn't just a young women's issue. It's an all women's issue. You know, young single women in college use birth control, so do married women in families, and they all have the right to manage their own bodies. And it's just offensive that these men think that they know better than us and our doctors.
What are two of the most egregious bills that were passed in Wisconsin that affected women's rights and women's health care?
Well, I think, for one, and actually right now, the Republican bill to repeal the Pay Equity Enforcement Act is sitting on Scott Walker's desk waiting for his signature. And from what we're hearing, it looks like he's going to just let it pass without a signature because he's too scared. Oh, actually, I'm hearing that he did sign it. So now we know for sure that that Scott Walker supports repealing the Healthy Youth Act, which means that children in our schools they don't have to be taught medically accurate, scientifically factual information about reproduction. He has signed to repeal the Equal Pay Enforcement Act. So women, and not just women, but this is applies to a number of protected classes like our veterans, can be don't have as much protection available to them if they've been discriminated against. So this just shows where Scott Walker stands. He's signed legislation that interferes in the patient-doctor relationship, that the Wisconsin Medical Society very strongly opposed this legislation. So I really can't just limit it to two. It's been so much more than two. I mean, it's been just a full on attack on women's rights and on women's health care access and on policies that affect our families.
So this is part of the anti-women's leadership from the Fitz brothers, you know, Scott Fitzgerald, who's running against, or Lori Campus, Larry Compass, I'll get that name right, is running against him in a recall, and of course Jeff Fitzgerald, who's running for U.S. Senate. This is just part of their agenda with Scott Walker.
Absolutely. It is the whole party. And, you know, what's just to me as a woman, as a mom, one of the most horrible things about this is that Republican women are a party to it. It's bad enough that the men are doing it, but when women are attacking women, is just even more sad that, you know, Rebecca Clayfish, you know, was out in a weird blog entry of hers where she used this very vulgar and demeaning language to describe a female Democratic candidate for governor. And it's just perpetuates the very harmful sexist rhetoric that has historically subjected women. And it completely, these women, the Republican women, are ignoring the harm that Scott Walker's policies have done to women.
Well, in some cases, they're actually the ones bringing the bills to the floor.
Absolutely. They are. And it's very upsetting. Just to me, that's to me personally one of the most upsetting parts, is that women are proposing and supporting legislation that harms other women.
The interesting thing I find with this is that we have this war on women. We have a march coming up on April 28th in Madison to support women's rights and to go to help push back against the war on women. And yet, when you see all these recalls, you see all these candidates that are coming out, especially these first-time candidates for local office, you see a lot of women running for these offices anymore. It's actually like 4-1 women versus men running for these offices.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the really great things that happened last summer with the recalls, that we have, you know, two new Democratic senators, and they're both women. So that's great. And we saw in just the elections this week, we saw a lot of women run for office and win. So I think that's great. And I think that's something that is needed, is to have more women in office and have more, you know, more Democratic progressive women in office that will fight for families, because it's not just the health care. You know, they're defunding Planned Parenthood, they're making it harder to get birth control, or making it harder to get breast and cervical cancer screenings. It's the attack on education. You know, we all, as women, no matter where we are on the political spectrum, we all care about our kids getting a good education. We care about them having clean water to swim in and drink, and a nice, healthy environment that they can play in. So there are a lot of policies that are at risk with the Republicans in power besides just health care. So I think that's why a lot of women are saying, hey, I cannot just sit on the sidelines and be upset about this. I need to fight back, because there is a lot of danger ahead if the Republicans stay in power.
Well, Melissa, thank you so much for being on today. I appreciate you coming on and talking about these things, and I'm looking forward to having you on again.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And if I may just announce that anyone who you know, wants to get on our rapid response team and be able to help us fight in the war on women can go to wisdems.org/war on women and sign up and be a part of our group.
All one word, war on women?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Wonderful. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for all his hard work on the show. And I want to let you know the music you heard today was from Ann Feeney and Ken Lundquist. And I'll have links to their website to my Facebook page if you'd like to hear any of their music or any more of their music. You can download my show from iTunes, or you can listen like Randy does, that you heard him call earlier. You can also listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. And you can listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off the Sarah Schultz Show app for Android phones and iPhones. That's a free app. Download it. Listen to all the archive shows. As soon as I'm done, it actually goes right onto that app. You can listen to it right away. You can tune in Saturday at 6 p.m. to WIDE 99.1 LPFM in Madison. On Tuesday at 1 p.m. to WHYS 96.3 LPFM in Eau Claire. And on Sundays at 8 a.m. to WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mukwonago, Waukesha. Remember, Wisconsin, one day longer, one day stronger. Have a great week, everyone. I'll catch you next week.